is sharp, pointed, and insightful. This is Stacy on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
You had McCabe, who himself was fired for lying to investigators, encouraging Flynn to not have a lawyer, basically setting him up.
The president is committed to protecting every single American citizen. He knows that without border security and without borders, you have no country at all.
The challenge here is we know the problem with border security. We need our borders stronger, strong, secure, especially with the caravan and others. So what the president's saying is, I want a deal.
The Democrats are fighting for illegal aliens. Donald Trump is fighting for American citizens. That's what this whole thing's about.
And now, Stacy Washington.
Welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here. Happy Friday to ya. Guess what? We're almost at Christmas. Yes, Christmas time. Oh, I love it. I love it. If I could, I would spend all of my time planning, executing, and attending Christmas parties, Christmas brunches, Christmas lunches, Christmas afternoons, and tree lighting ceremonies, caroling. I would only do Christmas things all the time. That's how much I'm into it. But I keep meeting people and getting to like visit at their homes. And I mean, as much as I think I'm into Christmas, these people have literally, they've lost their ever-loving minds. They're so into Christmas. And I love it. Oh my goodness, it's so much fun. And I know for some people, and I'm sorry about it, that it can be hard because maybe you don't like putting up trees, or maybe you think people go overboard, or maybe it's just, you know, whatever the case might be. I get it. But, so enjoyable. Yes, it's so, so good to have the celebration of Jesus Christ's birth and all of the, it's just a great feeling to have people, everyone's kind of in a better mood than normal and trying harder to be nice. And I encountered someone that was at a business trying to pick up an order, and the guy was mean, and I came home and I was in a bad mood because the guy was mean. And then later I snapped out of it because I just thought to myself, it's Christmas time. I can't let this man steal my joy. I've got to still be in a good mood. And so I woke up this morning and just a little song in my heart, and I got a whole bunch of stuff done beforehand, then attended a Christmas brunch that is a tradition for a friend of mine. She and her mom have been throwing this same girlfriend's Christmas brunch for, she said, since she was a kid. Her mom used to throw it for her and her friends. And then as a grown-up, her mom would travel to her at Christmas time, you know, after she got married, and they would throw it because it used to be at her mom's house. Now it's always at her house. And it was just so nice. I love seeing her mom and her mom's friends, and then my friend who invited me, and there's a bunch of other women there. And it was just nice to meet them and spend time and, you know, sit with my friend and eat the delicious brunch food. So I just encourage you to find some time, carve it out to spend some time with friends, family, whoever, and to go to church and to try to absorb as much of the season as we can. Because after Christmas, it's like a no man's land until Valentine's Day. So you have all those weeks of just basically cleaning up from Christmas and dealing with the winter. And then it's Valentine's Day. So we'll get to that when it comes. But this hour, we have another guest, fantastic guest. We are going to be speaking to Dave Workman. He's from the Second Amendment Foundation, the same group that gave me the 2018 Journalist of the Year, Second Amendment Foundation. He's going to come on and talk to us about the Parkland, Florida Commission Report. This is a bombshell, 447 pages. So he's going to come on and tell us exactly what they recommended and how it dovetails in with what the Second Amendment Foundation has been advocating for a very, very long time. So kind of validation for them. But right now, I want to talk a little bit about Flynn. It is my opinion that not only has Flynn been railroaded, but he is being treated in the worst possible way if you think about the fact that it looks like now the DOJ kind of entrapped him. So if he did indeed lie and he was convicted of the lying, okay, but where's everybody else who's going to be prosecuted for that? Why are only Republicans being prosecuted for that? And second of all, if the Flynn matter is the impetus for the entire Mueller investigation, and it turns out he was railroaded, then why are we still doing the Mueller investigation? Why is he still rooting around under chairs and acorns looking for some collusion? I don't know. So let's listen to number two. It's Elizabeth Harrington.
In the Russia matter, I don't think the Cohen revelation of sentencing did too much to advance the narrative because he's going to prison for tax evasion. But on the Flynn matter, I think we have a lot more questions on the double standard that the FBI took in handling and going scorched earth after Trump, but kid gloves with Hillary Clinton. And I think Flynn's only crime here was going to work for a Republican president because you had McCabe, who himself was fired for lying to investigators, encouraging Flynn to not have a lawyer, basically setting him up. So then 7 months later, writing the 302 to say he lied.
7 months later.
Yes, 7 months in August when they had this meeting without lawyers present on the FBI's, convinced him to not have a lawyer present. But here you have, in the Clinton case, Paul Kambada, the IT guy who used BleachBit on the server. Investigators said they knew he was misleading them. They knew he was lying. They didn't charge him with making false statements. What did they do? They gave him immunity. And we saw that throughout the Clinton case. Kid gloves didn't go after anybody. But because Flynn was working for a Republican president, they went after him and they got him on something.
Did you hear what she said? They got him on something. So it's not about him doing anything. It's like, well, what can we do? Well, first of all, let's send him in there without his attorney. Second of all, once he gets in there without his attorney, we can talk to him and kind of massage our questions to him to make sure that we're getting, you know, a bit of confusion from him. And then, of course, he's a general, you know, it's not like he's some patsy, but he was set up in such a way to make it easier for them to do what they needed to do. And now they've got him. The question is, are they going to, like, sentence him to jail time for doing things? Honestly, I don't care, except that we see only one group of people being prosecuted for this lying to Congress thing. It's as if Mueller doesn't know Hillary Clinton and Hooman Abedin and the others, Clapper, that they exist. I don't get that at all. We'll be talking about the Parkland massacre, and we'll also be going into Representative Roger Marshall. He talked about every day 10 terrorists and 40 criminals trying to cross the border, getting in through our open southern border. It's just wide open. There's just nothing stopping people from finding a place to cross over. Now, this next story, I'm really... It's like getting smacked around over and over and over again, and then you just get punch drunk and you just stop feeling it. It's another story about Facebook, the latest privacy scandal, the private photos of millions of users accidentally shared with 1,500 apps. Private photos of users accidentally shared. How is it an accident at this point? They've done it accidentally so many times. How could it possibly still be an accident? So, Facebook said it found a bug that gave as many as 1,500 third-party apps access to the unposted Facebook photos of up to 6.8 million users. The affected pictures include those posted on Facebook Stories and Facebook Marketplace, as well as those that people uploaded but never shared. So, what did Facebook say in response? We're sorry that this happened. We're sorry that it happened. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Call lines are open at 866-963-2037. 866-963-2037. We can talk about anything. It's kind of like Open Line Friday. You know, if you want to join in and talk about any topics that are going on during this week or any new topics that we haven't yet covered on the show. So Facebook says they put it in a developer-focused blog post. They discovered a nasty bug in their photo software. And all they're getting in response is from this horrible, bug, as they're calling it, is this, it's sharing photos. So she says, in the article, she says, for example, if someone uploads a photo to Facebook but doesn't finish posting it, maybe because they've lost reception or walked into a meeting, we store a copy of that photo So the person has it when they come back to the app to complete their post. I mean, aren't they something? They've always got some good reason why they can do whatever they want to do. 876 app developers and 1,500 apps, and users had to give access to Facebook to access the API. And in other words, you give authorization to the app for it to access your photos, and the app then can access any of the photos that you've uploaded to Facebook. And Facebook says the bug was active for about 12 days in September. And so they say, we're sorry. Early next week, we'll be rolling out tools for app developers that will allow them to determine which people using their app might be impacted by this bug. And they have obviously had this string of scandals. So it's like they're having these scandals about accidental sharing more than one time per year now. And I'm not talking only about the Cambridge Analytica. So here's what they recommend. You're going to get an alert on Facebook if you were one of the 6.8 million users. They're also recommending that people log into any apps with which they have shared their Facebook photos and check which photos that app has access to. And I recommend, just as a personal aside, Stacey Washington, not affiliated with Facebook, doesn't want to be anything like that, that you go in periodically to Facebook and Twitter and all of these different ones and check and see which apps are authorized. So I did this once on my Twitter account and found that apps that I hadn't used in like 5 years still had access to my entire Twitter account. And so all you have to do is revoke access. It's just a single click and the access is revoked. And then you have fewer exposures because, in my opinion, this is going to continue to happen. Now, there's another app called Parlay, and I want to pull it up for you. Parler News. Sorry, it's pronounced Parlay, but it's Parler News. And it's a new platform. It's named for the French word meaning to speak, Parlay. And many are saying it's the next logical move for those who wish to do so freely without the fear of being silenced. So 2 days ago, they were actually promoting this on the Daily Caller, and I just took a cursory quick look. When you go to the website, they have a red banner across the top that says, update, Parler has surged in popularity in the last 48 hours. Service will be slow, and you may receive networking areas while we work on scalability. Please bear with us. Thanks. That in and of itself tells me that people are ready for an alternative to old Fakebook. They're ready for an opportunity to have a place that they can go to where they don't have to worry about continual sharing of their personal information accidentally with this fake apology coming on the heels of it every single time. So it's Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R, home.parler.com. I'm pronouncing it that way so you can know how to spell it. But the pronunciation, the correct pronunciation is Parlay. They have a commenting plugin. You can automatically post articles. So any article that you have posted to a website can be automatically posted to your social news application. They feature news articles and push notifications to extend conversations, and they improve the interface with plugin integration upgrades. Those are native in your native comment section. So they have a lot of like information here. And there's a plugin that you can download for Apple and for Android. You can also request a demo, and you can contact their team. Let me click on the team page. Founded in 2018 and based in Henderson, Nevada. And parler is a French verb that means to speak. After being exhausted with a lack of transparency in big tech, ideological censorship, and privacy abuse, our co-founders John and Jared decided to create an alternative solution. Parlay provides a commenting and social news platform for digital publishers, influencers, bloggers, writers, politicians, and social users to share news, opinions, and content in real time. Sounds nice. We'll see where it goes, right? All right, when we get back, we'll have more for you. Stay right there.
Hey, Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. 2019 is upon us, and we're going to be going back to Washington, D.C. and to Williamsburg for our spiritual heritage tours. And if you've been wanting to go, maybe this is the year for you. These tours fill up several months in advance. And one of the reasons they do is because we have an actual historian, a professional historian that comes on our tour with us. His name is Stephen McDowell. He's the president of the Providence Foundation, and he knows more about early American history, especially the Christian influence on early American history. He knows more than anybody I know. So, if you want to go with us, you can find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's in June and September. Pick the month you want to go. Find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
You know, the carol, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, is an English translation of a Latin hymn that was sung during Advent and Christmas. The text goes back to at least the 18th century and perhaps much earlier, while the music goes back to the 15th century. O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Emmanuel means God with us. Even before the coming of Christ, we see passages in the Old Testament that remind us that God was with Israel. In 1 Kings 8, we read, "Praise the Lord who has given rest to his people Israel, just as he promised. Not one word has failed of all the wonderful promises he gave through his servant Moses. May the Lord our God be with us as he was with our ancestors. May he never leave us or abandon us." In Psalm 46, we read that the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. One of the most visible reminders of God's presence was during the Exodus. God was with the Israelites as a pillar of fire by night and a pillar of smoke by day. His presence was with them in the tabernacle and later in the temple in the Holy of Holies. But the most important aspect of Emmanuel is found in the New Testament. John tells us in his gospel, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us." This is the miracle of the incarnation. God put on human flesh and came to Israel so that he might give his life for all of us. Paul writes to Timothy, "Here is the great mystery of our religion. Christ came as a human." This is what we celebrate at Christmas. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Stacy on the Right with Stacy Washington on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Well, you know, this is the brilliance of Donald Trump, is to put that meeting on national TV so everybody can see the dynamics of what's going on when the president tries to meet with Mr. Schumer and Ms. Pelosi. So this border is all about national security. Every day, over 10 terrorists and 40 criminals try to cross that border. Over 90% of the illicit opioids come into this country through that border as well.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for being here. That was Republican Roger Marshall saying that every day 10 terrorists and 40 criminals try to cross the border. And he was being interrogated by one of the cable news hosts who got a little bit, like you could see he was getting miffed about the fact that this was even being brought up. And he didn't want to have to listen to those kinds of facts coming out on his air. So he tried to discredit him. And he said, "Well, where'd you get that information?" "Well, from the DOJ." "Well, how have they verified whether or not these people are terrorists or not?" Because, you know, what? Like, the DOJ doesn't know what a terrorist is. Come on. The DOJ knows what terrorists are, what terrorism is. Why was that even a question? So then Stephen Miller, he's weighing in on the border wall fight. And we're going to listen to that audio in just a second. But I want to tell you guys a funny story about something that happened to Stephen Miller just recently. And I don't, you know, you might have heard a little tale of it, but apparently some protesters decided to twerk their way across D.C. So they danced their way, they twerked their way across D.C. so that they could have the opportunity to call this a twerk protest, maybe make it more fun, I don't know. And then when they got over to his new apartment, because they found out that he'd gotten a new apartment in Washington, D.C., and they wanted to protest it, Then they stood outside and they danced and twerked and protested Stephen Miller being there. When he found out about it, he thought it was pretty funny. He didn't seem upset at all. But remember, so twerking and Stephen Miller, like how much further apart could those two things be? He's a bit of, you know, he's kind of nerdy. And I say that with the utmost respect. I enjoy the fact that he's so good at research and that his facts and every bit of information are always so together. So he was on television talking about the border wall, and he weighed in on the actual fight that's going on surrounding this issue. It's number 5.
First of all, the bill that you mentioned in the lead-in would have, in fact, been a total catastrophe and gutted interior enforcement permanently forever. We've already built or have underway over 100 miles of the wall, and this stand that we're taking right now with the entire nation watching, frankly, the whole world watching, is a stand that we think we're going to win. There's beautiful 30-foot rock-solid bollard steel in the ground. You can go down and look at it.
But is it up high and it's going 30, up high?
30 feet tall.
Where,
so unlike the old, well, you have it in El Centro, for example, you have it in the San Diego area and in Calexico and many other areas too. Okay. But that 30-foot barrier.
Well, I'm going there. I'm going to go just do a show from the wall. Yeah. Maybe I'll sit on the wall when I do it.
Because you see the old, shorter barrier that predated this administration. You see people climbing over it and throwing human beings over it. You need that 30-foot height. But I just want to say, I want to get to the real issue at hand. The Democrats are fighting for illegal aliens. Donald Trump is fighting for American citizens. That's what this whole thing's about. You've covered this better than probably anybody for years. You understand this is about sovereignty. It's about working men and women. It's about safe communities. It's about wages, living conditions, quality of life. This is the battle right now, right before our very eyes. We are going to win because Donald Trump is not backing down.
So here's what's awesome about that. I like his enthusiasm. I like the fact that he's planning on, supporting the president and making the commitment to seeing this thing through. We need some excitement surrounding this. And the reason I say that is because it seems pretty hopeless. It seems like the moment to get this done, to strong arm the Democrats, has passed. And instead of us actually seeing something substantial, we're just seeing a lot of talk. I do appreciate that the president has made it pretty clear that he is going to use the military to build the wall if that's what he has to do. And, you know, again, thank God for that. But in the end, the most important thing that has to happen is for the American people to be made aware, all of the American people, even the ones who aren't paying attention, to be made aware that when they give votes to the Democrats, they're giving votes to people who don't care if Americans are killed by illegal immigrants. And that is happening. And that the only way to put a stop to it is to have a border that actually works. Now, I know that people don't like it when you get to speak in that truth, but that's not my concern. It is not my concern whether or not people are happy with truth speaking. My concern is, and always will be, that people are informed and able to make decisions about what it is that they might have to do. You know, and specifically, you know, you have to decide whether or not you're going to support policies that really open us up to more terrorism, open us up to more negative consequences. It's not just the border, it's also in public schools. No one really talks about the factionism, like the factions that have become really evident in areas where white population is replaced by Hispanics, and the Hispanics outnumber the blacks in the population. And then blacks are being bullied and kids are, you know, suffering at the hands of gangs and things like that. And traditionally, people try to, you know, I don't want to characterize who the aggressors were or traditionally were. The point is that people are being harmed and neighborhoods are being radically changed. And the assimilation isn't happening at a rate where people can actually get in here and get Americanized. And that's what we want. And it's not because we're xenophobic or we're afraid of people who aren't Americans. It's because we know that when people come to America and they assimilate, that they begin to adopt the same kind of living style, the same kinds of things that we expect out of other Americans, they begin to adopt that too. And once they've been Americanized, they're much less likely to be involved with the criminal justice system and to not graduate from high school or to even require, welfare services. But if we don't spend time assimilating people, then we're not going to have the opportunity for these people to experience that. So they're being robbed of experiencing the American dream, and we're being robbed of having a populace that accurately reflects what so many of us are voting for, what we are believing for, what we're praying for, which is a safe and stable America. The fact that that even has to be explained is kind of crazy pants. It's kind of like people are, it's like we're in Bizarro World, right? It's Bizarro World. That's what it is. So I thought it was good audio from Stephen Miller. He's always an energetic supporter and passionate advocate for border control, and he brings the facts and figures to support it. So two more things. First of all, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are talking about teaming up. They posed for a photo together, which is spurring on speculation that they may possibly be the ticket. The tweet is from one of their comms director, and it says, "You just never know who you might run into in D.C. And Kamala Harris is smiling like he's her boyfriend, and he's looking as Joe Biden always looks. He's hugging her from the side. He's looking just happy to be alive. They're both considered potential presidential candidates to challenge President Trump. Biden repeatedly tops polls because he has super high name recognition. He was the vice president. But he's here. It's obvious that they're in front of a building. It looks like the Watergate building. They're standing in front of a building, kind of in the road. Their staffer is in the car, has taken the picture from in the car, and the two of them are squidged down so that they can get into the frame, and they're smiling and laughing. And Rich Jones on Twitter says, "Something tells me this is going to be a historic photo. Please let this be the 2020 ticket. Now that's a team. I'd vote for that ticket." Of course, others who are in the know are calling it for Beto O'Rourke. They say he's definitely going to be the one. And also Andrew Gillum in Florida, who lost that gubernatorial contest. Both he and O'Rourke have met with former President Barack Obama in past weeks, which means they're considering running. And it doesn't mean they met together. They've met individually with the president about this particular thing. I think it's kind of crazy. None of these people have the experience to be the president. Really, honestly. So the next last story for this segment, we're going to Chris Christie declining White House chief of staff role. And we also have call lines open for you, 866-963-2037. Chris Christie has declined the White House chief of staff role. So he was actually in D.C. talking to the president, and he told the president he doesn't want to be chief of staff. He doesn't want to replace John Kelly. Now, the New York Times' Maggie Haberman obtained a copy of his statement, and here's what he said. "It's an honor to have the president consider me as he looks to choose who will be the next chief of staff for the White House. However, I've told the president that now is not the right time for me or my family to undertake this serious assignment. As a result, I've asked not to be considered for this post." Now, remember, Chris Christie ran for president. And if he'd won, he'd be in the White House right now. So hopefully his wife would have been ready for that. So it sounds like a thanks, but no thanks. Now, President Trump actually considered Christie to be a top contender. And he discussed the job with Chris Christie on Thursday night. I personally have a different take on it. Here's how I see it. I feel like, so there was a lot of contention in the role of press secretary, and they had two people run through that position, and President Trump wasn't happy with either one of them. And then he got a woman in the role, and the woman, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And she's doing well. she's actually got more control of the situation than any of the previous predecessors had. So I think, just this is just me, you know, tossing it out there, that President Trump should have a female chief of staff because he tends to work better with women than with men. They tend to last longer in his administration. And then in addition to that, it would be an opportunity to kind of change things up and have, you know, how you can reorient things. So you can say, I'm going to do something radically different here because I want to reorient the situation. And I think that's what they should do. Honestly, I think that's what the president should do. Now, who is it? Well, I mean, some people have suggested that Nikki Haley could do the job because she's leaving the UN. But the reason she's leaving the UN is because she's been working for 10 years in the public eye and not really had any time off. And she's staying in New York City because her son is going to high school there. So it's highly unlikely that she'll be willing to run down to Washington, D.C. and live there during the week and only come home on the weekends to New York City. I just don't see her doing that. But I believe there's a woman out there who could fill the role. And the reason I'm saying that is not because I buy into that whole gender, like we need more women, this or that, but because of the president's temperament for working with people. He may be able to find someone that he likes that, you know, obviously is a man. I'm not saying that's impossible. But I think a woman would be an interesting choice. And it would be a dynamic change to the environment. You know, remains to be seen what will happen. So I don't know if you saw this story. This is over at the Christian Post. And this is interesting. So Pastor John Gray recently bought his wife a $200,000 Lamborghini. And when people found out that he'd purchased that, because obviously he works for the church, they pay his salary. When they found out that that had occurred, there was some backlash. So after the backlash, he issued a new video. It's a 23-minute monologue that he broadcast on Facebook Live outside of his church in Greenville, South Carolina. And he did this big thing so that he could say, you know, hey, I'm going to use Ephesians 5. He quoted from Ephesians 5 at the end. He explained that he was inspired to get the posh SUV for his wife in February after they saw a presentation for it at their hotel while attending the NBA All-Star Game in Los Angeles, California. He said, I saw my wife's eyes light up. She said, this would be a dream. And that's all she had to say. After gifting his wife the SUV in a lavish celebration last Saturday that left her screaming with abandon, many critics raised concerns that the optics of a pastor indulging in such opulence and wondered if he'd use church funds to finance it. So he answered that. He said, not a nickel, not a penny from this church, Relentless Church, went towards the gift that I gave my wife. That matters. That's the only thing that matters, because I know, like you know, that there are some pulpit pimps out here who take church money and do the wrong thing. But I work hard for my family, and I tithe, and I sow, and I've done it my whole life, and I'll continue to do it. And then he apologized for getting emotional in his defense. He also noted when he made the purchase, he didn't make it as a pastor, but as a husband. Okay. He says, I'm a husband first. Get that in your spirit. Don't confuse with what I do with what I am. He also explained that he's still paying for the Lamborghini because he made a deposit on it in February. And that he worked hard and saved from a variety of income streams, including a second book deal and his Oprah Winfrey Network reality TV show, The Book of John Gray, which is in its fourth season, to pay for the Lamborghini. And then he goes into a bunch of emotional rhetoric about taking his own, you know, God take his life, et cetera, et cetera. He's also an associate pastor at Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas. And he says he's tired of people talking about him. All right, when we get back, we're going to have Dave Workman, Second Amendment Foundation. Stay there. This is Just a Minute with Stacey Washington. Every year, the timeline is the same. The weather gets cold, Christmas decorations go up, and public officials start banning the celebration of Christmas. The most recent instance in Nebraska followed the pattern to a T. An elementary school principal decided to ban the colors red and green, Christmas music and trees, ornaments, and actually saying Merry Christmas. After a considerable backlash, she has been placed on administrative leave. Here at American Family Radio, we have a way to push back. Our Keep Christ in Christmas wristbands. They're cute in Christmas colors and are a great way to start friendly conversation about keeping the reason for the season front and center. We don't take 2 weeks off in December for any other reason than the celebration of the birth of Christ. Order your bundle of 10 wristbands today. Call 877-927-4917. That's 877-927-4917 or order online at afastore.net.
I'm not so certain we have as much time as many of us think. It's high time for the body of Christ to return with a fire lit up under us to proclaiming the truth of God's word, to proclaim the truth of sin and repentance, and not coming from a high, lofty position, but telling the truth as such were some of us. We have to do that. We have to. But what happens is, and I call this first world problem, we have this epidemic of churchianity in America to where we are far more accepting and far more willing to embrace the trappings of church life, even if they're void of the presence and power and fire of Christ. And I would say to you, just as the Bible says, that we can have a form of godliness while simultaneously, at the exact same time, deny the very power of the gospel.
Tune in to the Hamilton Quarter, weekday afternoons at 5 Central on Urban Family Talk.
This is Fox on Justice, and today we're talking justice that's out of this world.
It's weird. There's nothing here. It's Mars.
There may not be much earthly activity on Mars yet, but one day humans could land and maybe even start a colony there. Scientists and engineers are working through the challenges, but one forward-looking thinker is pondering the legal questions. Marco Kovich, president of a think tank in Switzerland, makes a point that laws that apply to earthbound humans may not work as well millions of miles away. First, he writes, who gets to colonize Mars? A country, a corporation, or some kind of international federation? Then, how would a Martian colony be governed? Would it be subject to the laws of back home or new regulations more suited for extraterrestrial life? And what if the colonists rebel and declare their independence? It could be 1776 all over again. Spacey stuff to think about here on Earth. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
You can watch a live stream of the show on Facebook or YouTube at Stacey on the Right. Now, back to the show on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the show. That's snazzy music, isn't it? Oh, yeah, let's celebrate. It's Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. I encourage you to say Merry Christmas to people when you're out. They may not be permitted to say it to you first, but most of them are allowed to say it back to you, and it lifts people's spirits when they hear Merry Christmas. Don't buy into the liberal lie that there's something wrong with Christmas. There's not. It's still just as awesome as it has always been, and we can always celebrate it with the same childlike abandon that we've always had, because Jesus is the reason for the season. Yes. Okay. Now it's my pleasure to welcome Dave Workman, Second Amendment Foundation. Thank you so much, Dave, for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
So it's wonderful to get to speak to you. First off, there's this kind of reaction going around on social media to the report, 447 pages, the Parkland, Florida Commission. They had a vote 13-1 to include in the commission report that, you know, teachers need to be armed. And that is what is throwing people for a loop. I know the Second Amendment Foundation and other great 2A organizations have been advocating for this for years. And this is the first time we've heard of some outside organization saying, yes, it's true. This needs to happen. Let's talk about that.
Well, I think it's significant that one of the lawmen on that commission, a sheriff down there, thinks it's a good idea to give people a fighting chance. And the people who are against it, the educators, and then one parent of a student who was killed at that high school, I don't like the idea at all. And frankly, that stuns me. And I'm not even sure if it's not irresponsible. You've got to give people a chance to defend those kids. When seconds count, the police are typically minutes away, or in the case of Parkland, they were right outside and didn't go in. You know, when there's lead in the air, you've got to go out there and stop that threat, because lives definitely are at stake. And believe me, we haven't heard the last. In fact, I think we've just heard about the first about this report, because this is just a draft. When the final report comes out, I can imagine some people having headaches over it.
Well, I can too, to be honest with you, Dave, but we're talking about them. The recommendation is not just pass a gun out to every teacher. This initial recommendation is simply that they feel like more than just one or two teachers, that you need a decent number of teachers to be trained first and then armed to be able to thwart an attack. That's not radical.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's really nothing radical about that idea at all. It's been tried and it's being done in other school districts. Nobody's expecting teachers to have to line up and somebody hand them a firearm. That's the myth that the anti-gun crowd wants to create. Nobody's going to force these teachers to do that, but a teacher who wants to volunteer, who has the mindset and the wear of it all to embark on that kind of a mission to protect the kids, give the kids in their class a little extra protection. I don't think we should discourage that sort of thing. You know, we've heard all the stupidity about, oh, gosh, everybody's going to get shot. The teachers don't know what to do. You know, that's nonsense. These teachers are going through training. There's a great program that's started up in the state of Ohio by the Buckeye Firearms Association. It's taught hundreds, if not a couple of thousand teachers, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you're talking about Faster Colorado?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is something that I can you tell the listeners about that a little bit? I want to say we've had one of the representatives on the program, but it's been quite a while, maybe a year ago or more. And this is something that most people don't even know exists, and it is an outstanding program. They've been training teachers for a considerable amount of time now, and the results have been really great.
Well, yes. The folks who started this are actually in Ohio. In fact, every year for the past, I think it's been 3 or 4 years, there's been somebody from the FASTER program, a guy named Jim Irvine, with the Buckeye Firearms Association, who has given an annual report to the Gun Rights Policy Conference. It's one of the most engrossing, interesting reports that comes out of that conference. And people around the country who attend this conference go away with the feeling that, hey, you know, that these guys are working outside the box. We've tried everything else. It hasn't stopped. Let's try this. It's a good idea.
Well, and so no one is harmed by the execution of this as let's put it like this. What have we got to lose? Right now, we have random mass shootings occurring in school districts where it's unpredictable because a lot of things went wrong in Parkland. So you could say it is predictable, right, Dave? You could say Parkland was one of the cases that is an anomaly because it was predictable because the person who executed the shooting was volatile, violent, and in constant contact with law enforcement and, psychotherapy-type folks. But everybody dropped the ball.
And you know something? I'm gonna suggest this to your audience because there are a lot of bright people out there listening to this right now. Over the years, we have heard repeatedly the gun control crowd saying, oh, we got to ban guns. We got to do this. We got to make a restriction here. We got to do this there. if it saves just one life. Well, you know, I'm going to throw that right back in their faces. If this program results in the saving of just one life, it's worth it.
Just one life, Dave. That's what they're always saying. So when can you talk a little bit about what it looks like? Because I think a lot of people would say, well, what you're talking about, teachers, and most teachers that you meet are these sweet, kind-hearted. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you can't imagine a person like that wielding a gun at school or carrying one concealed. But that is just one part of the persona of a teacher, and not every teacher would be perfect for this.
Well, frankly, when I went to school, which was about 1,000 years ago, but in my junior and senior high school classes, we had teachers who were very capable of taking care of themselves and a lot of other people, too. We never had a school shooting anywhere I went, and we had rifle teams at my junior and senior high schools. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the teachers with the mindset, with the understanding going into this, what firearms and self-defense is all about, they're way ahead of the curve already. You know, they're going into this with a clear head. They understand the training regimen. They do learn to shoot. They learn to when not to shoot. There's a lot that goes into these programs, up to and including administering first aid to people who've been shot. You know, after the smoke clears. And, you know, frankly, we have tried all this other stuff, locked doors. Well, they left the doors unlocked at Parkland. We've tried police on campus, you know, school resource officers. And sometimes they do a real good job. In the case of Parkland, maybe not so much. But having a school resource officer, I know, has paid off in Maryland and in a situation in Colorado a few years ago. We need to get outside the box. Stop, you know, get away from the old ideas that guns are bad, guns are terrible, and people will be irresponsible. That's nonsense. You know, the training is there to guide these teachers, and they're all volunteers. Or administrators, for that matter, they're responsible people. Otherwise, you know, why would we trust our kids to them?
Well, they are, and so it's fine if people feel like they don't trust certain teachers, but it's not really about whether or not a teacher is your favorite or not, or that you have a good working relationship with them. It's more about whether or not that teacher is willing to submit to training so that they can become qualified and certified to carry concealed in a school building. And the Faster Colorado program, which is just one of the programs that are being used across the country to make this happen, what they're doing is they're evaluating people during this process, and they're training them and giving them the confidence and certitude to be able to carry concealed and to use their firearm to defend themselves and students. And it involves all of that. It's not just, this is how a gun works, this is how you pull the trigger, this is how you load it, now go. It's much more comprehensive than that, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was a firearms instructor, volunteer, NRA certified for about 35 years, and I've sat through the presentations that they've made at the Gun Rights Conference. I've been really impressed with the detail that the folks who put this together have gone to make this program a success. And frankly, if it spreads across the country even more, I think the school districts that take advantage of that program are probably going to be ahead of the curve, too.
So when we talk about being ahead of the curve, what we're really, really talking about is, obviously, we want people trained. We want them armed responsibly. But we also want there to be a kind of, you know, the peace through strength type of thing, where students who know that there are an unnamed number, so this, you don't know how many, of teachers, school administrators, or might be the janitor, you don't know who it is, who are armed and ready to rumble in case someone comes in shooting, they're not going to come in and shoot up their school, correct?
Well, at least that's the idea. And I haven't heard of a single incident at any one of these schools with armed teachers. And, you know, maybe there's something to that. Likewise, I haven't heard of any incidents on campuses, college campuses, where they let people who are licensed to carry actually carry. You know, the one thing in common, all these school shootings and all the mall shootings, they're all gun-free zones. And you would think that somebody would wake up some morning, pour himself a cup of coffee, and suddenly say, hey, wait a minute. Gee, maybe we got to rethink this. And thanks to the folks at the FASTER programs, whether it's Ohio or Colorado or where else, you know, they're already thinking ahead of that. And they've got the program. Let's give it a try.
And so you were talking about the preliminary nature of this report and that they're going to, I guess, do some more research before they come out with the final report.
Well, it's my understanding that they're going to review this thing and you know, have some more discussion about it. But at 447 pages, which I think this draft report is, I doubt that they're going to change a lot. And besides, now that the draft, the information is out there, you know, I don't think anybody dares to remove the recommendation about arming teachers because somebody's going to cry foul over that. And, you know, let the report say what it says.
So I'm expecting, so this first round, I haven't heard anything about it on mainstream media, but I'll keep looking. I'm expecting that they'll ignore it or bury it. And then when the final report comes out, if it reflects the same recommendation, that they'll have to have the Parkland kids, the ones who've been commercialized, come out against this plan. Do you see them actually
yeah.
doing this?
I think you're way ahead of the curve here, too. I thought this through immediately when I wrote about it yesterday at Conservative Firing Line, that this is kind of a slap in the face to some of those high school kids that I think they've been co-opted by the gun control movement and turned into nice, happy faces, around, you know, media darlings. But nothing that they've said reflects anything different than I've heard from the gun prohibitionists for a long, long time.
I find it horrifying and terrifying and utterly ridiculous that in a country with 400 to 600 million guns, any person would be able to walk into a place where children or women or, you know, men shopping, any person, any human being would be able to walk into a heavily populated place and shoot it up without meeting any resistance. Like, I just think that is the most ridiculous thing. Out of all the ridiculous things, that is one of the most ridiculous. And that's why I love what you guys are doing at the Second Amendment Foundation. I happen to be the 2018 Journalist of the Year from the Second Amendment Foundation, so it is such a pleasure to have you on the show. I hope we can talk again soon. And I hope these people come back out with this report and they stay the course and that they actually make this happen.
I sure look forward to that. I've got two of those Journalist of the Year awards, so I'm very proud of those two, and good for you.
Thanks, Dave. I'm excited about it. I hope to do more, and I certainly... This is a stunning report. I like it. I hope they stick to their guns. And thank you so much for your time today. Merry Christmas and have a great weekend.
Well, Merry Christmas to you too. Thanks very
much. All right. Thanks, Dave. All right, that's the show. God bless you. Get in the pew this weekend. Bring a friend with you. Go out to brunch afterwards or go home and eat. From the story from earlier. I'm so excited about the weekend because I want to unplug and I want to spend time with our college girl who's back. And I want to encourage you to have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you on Monday.